With all due respect. And remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
Here with Nick Wilson.
I am America's sports talk show host. Hear me roar.
Stan Norfleet here.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
No, it ain't.
Oh, bleep you. Get off my...
Bye, Gomez.
Bye, Gomez, right. To both of you.
Do I detect some kind of sarcasm here?
Never.
Sports Radio FNZ, the show is back. Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. We got plenty to get to, guys. We've got Joe Ovius of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. We'll talk ACC tip-off, which he was a part of earlier this week. We'll talk bye-bye Coach K. We'll talk the weekend coming up in the Triangles sports. Triangle College football, including NC State, Syracuse, Ben Lieber, former Vikings linebacker, now with KFan in Minneapolis, and also the Unrestricted podcast with Ben Lieber. He'll be joining us coming up at noon to talk about the Vikings game. But good morning, Stan. How you doing, buddy?
What's going on, my brother Wilson? Itty bitty fitty. Good to see you too. Metrolina, yes, I too was embarrassed, but it must be discussed. That being said, it's Thursday. I feel good.
I think we need to frame the Hornets' loss last night, 127-59, on national television in the preseason finale. I think we need to frame this the proper way, because I don't think all is what it seems. What no one could know but the Hornets and us is Stan and I have had an ongoing argument for 2 weeks about when to talk Hornets, how much Hornets should we talk, should it lead the show, should it not lead the show, is it a rundown thing, and I think the Hornets saw you and I arguing back and forth over multiple weeks, and they said, you know what? We're going to put out a performance so bad.
Undeniable.
On national television that they have no other choice than to lead with this so that they don't fight. This was the Charlotte Hornets doing you and I a solid, because that's how strong the partnership is between this station and that team.
Nick.
That's a Nick narrative, by the way.
Yes. In all my years of watching ball, I have never witnessed anything like a 68-point bleep kicking.
Mm-hmm.
To witness it live, I mean, it got to the point. Me and Bailey were looking at each other like, we're going to set the record for fewest points scored in an NBA game, which they came close. I think that record's 49 points. And they tied the largest defeat in the history of the NBA shot clock era at 68 points. I will never forget that the rest of my life, bro.
They had two players in double digits last night. I'm going to say that again. They had two players, only one of which was a starter, in double digits last night. I thought what was interesting is, because I watched a little bit of the game, once the Hornets came out and by the halftime, they had 30 points, I had kind of realized, all right, well, this one's over.
They were down 31 at the break, Nick.
They were, and so I kind of checked out.
What are we doing?
But because I do realize that now this has happened in half of the preseason games, I understand that—
Both of them at home.
That there are people that are going to want to talk about this, so we're going to get into this. But I will say, it was funny to me to watch the national reaction on Twitter, including people like John Hollinger of The Athletic, including Mike Golic Jr., to see some of the tweets that were coming out about this. If this was a regular season game, guys, I would be so horrified if they had ever put this effort in a preseason game. I think the bigger concern for me, like, there are some legitimate concerns to talk about, things that popped up yesterday. The bigger concerns are that P.J. Washington and Miles Bridges both got banged up in this game. That, to me, that was my thing. You asked me yesterday, what do you need to see? And I said, come out of this game healthy. No more injuries. And then both Miles and P.J. get banged up. That was the part that was really frustrating for me, not necessarily the result.
So, not watching the broadcast, being in the arena, I didn't know about P.J.'s finger until Kyle Bailey and I did the post-game show. And James Borrego informed us that P.J. had a finger. P.J. Washington, what did he do? I was trying to find...
He had 4 points.
I was thinking about the
minutes. 3 rebounds.
P.J. Washington, if I can get it up, Fleet.
He had 11 minutes, yeah.
11 minutes for P.J., and then when Miles went up for a rebound, and we've all seen it where a guy injures his knee and he comes down quick and picks it right back up off the floor, mm-hmm. immediately not wanting to put any weight on it. That's what Miles did. And I was like, me and Bailey were like, oh my God, no. Then you saw him walk off on his own power. And then right after that, Borrego says, hey, LaMelo Ball, Chino Hills, yeah, young fella, Bryce Kent, come sit down right here. I'm not doing this. So we shut him down.
So there's a few different ways to get into this. But I think we can all admit.
That like we need a neuralizer for Men in Black?
Yes. Yes. We need Will Smith or Tommy Lee Jones to show up. First, they need to hit the Hornets with a Bigoma.
Yeah.
Right?
Bigoma. I'll take Rosario Dawson. She can show up with a neuralizer.
I would prefer it to be neuralized by Rosario Dawson. Although then I wouldn't remember that I was neuralized by Rosario Dawson.
But in
Dawson.
That moment, I would.
That fleeting second before neuralization, I would remember. I think you look at this. I think it's fair to look at where are the backup big moments, minutes going to come from. I think it's fair to look at the shooting woes. Like, there are a few things just structurally with this team that I think are, that have been highlighted in the preseason that are going to be talking points early, and I'll go with the shooting. Like, you did make a decision to move on from Malik and Devontae, both guys who could be a bit hot or cold. Both guys who weren't necessarily the most consistent shooters in the NBA. Devontae didn't have his best year last year. Devontae not great at the rim. But those were two really good three-point shooters, and you replace them with somebody in a James Bouknight, who that's the big question. You replace them with guys like Cody Martin and Jalen McDaniels.
Kelly Oubre Jr.
Now, Kelly's kind of like a league average three-point shooter, but he's very hot and cold. So I think the shooting thing, I think this is going to be something that unless James Bouknight can kind of give you that shooting, or Ish Smith, or even if Kelly can have more of a career year with a facilitator like LaMelo, I think this is going to be part of the conversation, especially now that PJ and specifically PJ got banged up in this game.
So Miles has moments where he shoots the ball well. There are going to be a ton of opportunities. What I've seen thus far is they penetrate to the paint or they run the pick and roll, and there are going to be numerous opportunities for whoever's in the far corner to shoot the corner three or whoever's at the far elbow to shoot the mid-range. That's going to be open all year.
Mm-hmm.
Miles, PJ, who else did I see in that spot? Miles, PJ,
you're gonna see
Jalen McDaniels.
You haven't seen it, but you're going to see Gordon in those spots.
Gordon is what I think the bulk of this year's scoring is going to have to fall on. Gordon, Terry, and some combination of Miles, Kelly Oubre Jr. I don't know that we're going to count on Bouknight to be able to come off the bench and give you, quite frankly, what Malik or Devontae was giving us last year.
So what's wild about this is I'm less concerned about scoring than I am about shooting. And I realize how intricately those two things are linked. But I do think, like, I think James Bouknight with enough touches can score the ball. I think LaMelo Ball.
Score or shoot?
I think score. I think LaMelo has shown that he has kind of teased a three-level scoring ability.
He's
there.
Not shooting the ball well this preseason.
But he's not shooting the ball well. I also think not having Gordon Hayward out there is going to hurt some of the looks you get defensively.
No doubt about that.
But I don't know. Like last year, if you needed a big three, Terry, Gordon, Devontae, Malik hit a few of those. PJ hit a few of those. Well, now PJ's dinged up. Gordon's in some health and safety thing. And, oh, by the way, you're down Devontae and Malik. It's more the three-point shooting that I'm concerned about.
They shot 12.5%.
Impacts the spacing.
Agreed 100%. I take out last night, Nick, fourth quarter. That doesn't count. The first three quarters where the starters got the bulk of their minutes and the rotation got the bulk of their minutes, they shot 12.5% from three. There was a point in the game where they, in the second quarter, where the Hornets hadn't made a three yet. They were over. Shooting, and I like to say scoring, I understand what you mean specifically to shooting, it could become an issue. I'm not ready to panic yet, but it is something that I'm noticing.
Well, and the trade that they made this offseason was your proven bench scoring for length and athleticism.
And a ceiling.
Yeah, and a ceiling, exactly. So I do think that there is going to be a trade-off. Here's the one thing. This is where it is just the preseason, so I don't want to react to this specifically. I don't care. I realize you and I are going to have to be a little patient with what they do with the backup big spot. Because it's going to take time for those guys to develop and learn the NBA. And, you know, Mason Plumlee's only going to do so much.
Kai Jones isn't ready yet.
He does not look ready yet. I think I can be patient with your shooting woes. Because even if you're competitive by the half point of the season, well, there's always a guy you can trade for. You can trade for shooting in the NBA at the deadline fairly easy. Mm-hmm. So it'll be frustrating, but I'm not overly concerned. Rim protection, work in progress. A lot of these things are going to be a work in progress. The thing that I've seen in the preseason that we cannot under any circumstances see once the regular season begins is effort. And that has been...
JB said it last night.
They have not looked interested in that the Memphis loss. Yeah. They did not look interested. Now, how much of that is preseason? I don't know. That's why I'm not here to panic about this today. But the reason why you got out to such a fast start last year was effort. It was your focus. It was your ability to play together here, even though you were a very young team by NBA standards. Well, I think you're a little bit younger now, and certainly in the back half of your bench. The effort is the big thing, because that's part of the James Borrego culture that we've bought into so much.
Which is what I keep asking myself. Is it more alarming the bad offense or more alarming the bad defense? James Borrego, quote, "We have to be better on both ends of the floor, especially defensively," end quote. How do you do that? Listen, this thing with the big, I wanted to see Mason Plumlee last night for myself. I just wanted to see how did he fit. And I know that he didn't have, you know, two other starters out there with him. I'm like, yeah, this big thing, this points in the paint, this rebound, we're not done having these conversations. James Borrego, I think, is more disappointed in the effort and the commitment on the defensive end more so than the stuff offensively.
I think, especially because PJ's a little banged up right now, I think it all of a sudden the young big scenario, is it Nick Richards? Is it going to be Kai Jones? And how much they play versus Mason Plumlee? I think Mason Plumlee can help you in a specific role with a specific... If you have to play Mason Plumlee 32 minutes a night, you're going to over-leverage him and it's going to hurt you. So you've got to try, and especially if PJ's hurt, you're going to have to backfill some of that time there.
Nick Richards got more time than Kai Jones and Vernon Carey Jr. throughout this preseason.
I would like to thank the Hornets, though, because I took the under. The under over-under last night was 219. The Hornets single-handedly made sure that the Nick pick of the day was right on the money. So big thanks to the Hornets there, even though the game in and of itself on national television sucked. What are the fair concerns to come out of the preseason with this young Hornets team? We've got Joe Ovius of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh coming up at 11. At 12, it is Ben Lieber, former Vikings linebacker, to break down the Vikings-Panthers game. But while we have the Hornets concern, there is the Panthers' concern. And Christian McCaffrey on Sports Radio FNZ. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. We've got Joe Ovius of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. He's going to be joining us in about 40 minutes. We'll break down ACC tip-off with him. We'll also get into the weekend in NC State football. We've got some Big Dick energy to talk about with our guy Joe Ovius coming up in 40 minutes. By the way, Steve Forbes, Demon Deacons head basketball coach for the men's side of things, tweeting back and forth, Stan and I, yesterday. He's throwing out the BDE to the good people of Deke Nation.
Winston-Salem and Deke fans nationwide.
I'm just going to tell you right now.
They have BDE.
It's catching on, and soon we're going to be on the Jumbotron in the arena.
Courtside.
With swag and 10% of the royalties from Big Deke Energy.
Good call on the 10%.
So you always got to think about the money. And you know what? We're taking care of our chickens. That's what we're doing here with Steve Forbes.
Your mentals and your chickens must be protected.
But as we have that conversation to come here, we have had the ongoing conversation with the Carolina Panthers about whether or not to play Christian McCaffrey. Obviously, last week, you and I were both ardent against playing him against Philadelphia, saying they shouldn't need him to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, if you look at the way Chuba Hubbard played, they didn't. They just needed Sam Darnold not to throw three picks. They just needed the offense to, you know, do some things creatively, which were not done.
Like score points in the third quarter.
That would be nice. Yeah. Or not just give the Eagles points as well.
That too.
But now, as we are on the precipice here, today marks 3 weeks from the injury for Christian McCaffrey on Thursday Night Football. Matt Rhule yesterday tackled Christian McCaffrey's status for Sunday's game against Minnesota.
Probably 50-50 on Christian. You know, I think it's going to come down to how he feels, you know, so I'll just have to wait and see how he responds to today and go from there. But I couldn't go either way right now.
Because we are in the three-week window, we finally made it to 3 weeks. Sunday will be about 3.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I am totally ambivalent into whether Christian McCaffrey plays or not on Sunday. I'd love to have the best player, but I no longer feel like they would be rushing him back if they deem him ready for Sunday.
Yeah, I think that I share your sentiment there. I'm okay with this being a game time decision. It didn't alarm me because this is the first time I think I've heard Matt Rhule err on the side of caution. I think Matt Rhule understands kind of what we've been saying. Hey, man, it's not worth whether it's rushing him back or putting him in a situation where he's not optimal when you have another 12 games. Like, it's not worth it. All right, 3 weeks out, kickoff, 3.5 weeks, and as you brought up off air, I'm becoming more comfortable with Chuba Hubbard, the 101 yards on the ground, the 4-plus yards per carry versus the Eagles last week. I said it coming into the season. Chuba is a high-volume back. Give him an opportunity to get in rhythm and get in sync. Even if C-Mac was to come back, you could still give Chuba more carries to still bring C-Mac along slowly.
I think that's maybe my frustration. And again, Matt Rhule saying Christian McCaffrey 50-50 to play on Sunday against Minnesota. I would like to have Christian out there. My only caveat to Matt is if there is even a kernel of doubt in your mind, not the doctors, but in your mind about playing Christian McCaffrey, err on the side of caution. Because then if he says, listen, if Christian were to go out in this game and if he were to tweak the hamstring and he said, yeah, there was no doubt in anybody's mind about this, then I can say, you know what? It's a soft tissue injury. These things happen. They don't necessarily get better in the season.
You know, every time I think about the people on the text line and just having conversations with folks throughout the city as I move around, people always say defer to the doctor. Kevin Durant did.
Ron Rivera did.
So, like, you can't always go with the medical opinions. Certainly, you factor that in and you take that into consideration. But there is a point in there where you have to go, no, this just doesn't feel right. And as a player, you have to understand that I've gotten the medical advice of experts. It's now on me because they're going to defer to your body. What do you think you feel you can do? And only the athlete knows, I feel like when I do this or that from a movement standpoint, it feels normal. It feels 80%, whatever that may be.
It also, like, I think it's unfair to put it on the doctor because the doctor is just treating a patient. Like, the patient is part of it to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I also think, like, the doctor doesn't say, all right, there's literally zero risk. Now you can go play.
Mm-hmm. The doctor's told Kevin Durant, there's a 30-something mm-hmm. percent chance now that this can go left.
And I think that's
important. And that's not a good thing going
and
left.
By the way, this isn't just a Christian McCaffrey conversation. One, doctors can get it wrong. But two, with respect to these doctors, I think we have it in our minds that the doctors are just, you're 100% healthy or you're 0% healthy. No, most people, like in my, at 300 and what is it, 305 pounds now, where I am now, mm-hmm. I am much healthier than I was about 106 pounds ago. Am I still 100% healthy?
No, I get what you're saying.
No, and I think that's with Christian. So I'm cool with him playing. I just want to make sure that Matt Rhule doesn't have any doubt. And here's the other thing to what you said. Christian McCaffrey being back on the field is no longer an excuse to not play Chuba Hubbard. And this is, to me, part of the plan with the Carolina Panthers. I think now you've seen when Chuba's been given carries, Chuba can tote the rock. You can trust him. So I think they need to go even heavier. When Christian comes back, don't put 30 touches just on the body of Christian McCaffrey. Put 25 touches on Christian McCaffrey through run and pass, and then give Chuba another 15. Get your running backs, be your offense, and then from there, I think that's going to open up some things for Robbie. I think that's going to open up more things for your tight ends, more things for Terrace Marshall Jr., and that's before we get into just being a creative play caller.
Now, anytime you say Sam Darnold, Christian McCaffrey, / Chuba Hubbard, there's still that it doesn't matter who the runner is. If the offensive line is not adequate, it doesn't matter who they put back there. So I look at Matt Rhule and go, all right, you and offensive line coach Pat Meyer, y'all got to figure something out. Because you can't put Christian in a situation where we feel like he got injured primarily because of usage. And then you're going to bring him back and use him that way again. And he's going to have to be used more often to try and be more efficient given the lack of productivity from the offensive line consistently.
Doesn't it feel like this would be a great week if you do play him? Considering he's 50-50 on a Wednesday, there's time to heal up, right? And when I say 50-50, that doesn't mean he's 50% health. It means that there's a 50-50 chance. Doesn't it feel like this would be a great game to roll out the we're going to give him X amount of touches? We're going to put him on a touch count. I don't trust them to do this because they haven't shown the ability to do this with Matt Rhule or Ron Rivera to put him on a pitch count and stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't it feel like this would be the great game to do it? One, you're still leveraging Chuba Hubbard. You're trying to keep him engaged. And two, you're not over-leveraging Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, so like, okay, in the Matt Rhule era, what do we believe Christian McCaffrey is? They didn't win a single game together a year ago. We know C-Mac missed 13 games. C-Mac started the three games this year. They win three games. The two games he doesn't start, they lose. So do you believe the Carolina Panthers overall win-loss is based on 22 being in the backfield, or is it more about the other parts? I put the emphasis on the other parts, including the offensive line and the decision-making of Sam Darnold.
I do. I agree with you to some extent. What I would say is I continue to watch Christian get utilized. And listen, they're getting a lot out of him. Because of the snap counts that he plays. In some ways, they're getting a lot out of him because just him being on the field there's a gravity to him that helps make things easier for the other guys on the offense. So I understand why they would say, is it easier just McCaffrey on the field, McCaffrey off the field? Yes, obviously it's easier because of the talent of Christian McCaffrey. But have I ever felt like, and this is less, I think this is truly the trick with a player like Christian McCaffrey. He's so versatile and he's so talented that I still don't feel like we've gotten the best usage, best iteration out of him. I thought the Panthers 2 years ago, 3 years ago, missed a great opportunity. You had CJ Anderson, who is a really nice backup running back, next to Christian McCaffrey, and they ran that 21 ponies, two running back set, like six times in the first eight games. It was inexcusable. I'd love to see a dual running back set. Now that Chuba's starting to be able to recognize and pass block, now that obviously they trust McCaffrey in the pass block, get them on the field at the same time. Make other defenses think about it, because that's, by the way, what does Cleveland do with
Nick Chubb?
I almost mixed up their name and I almost got fired. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Well, they put them on the field at the same time. What did Dallas do? What does Dallas do with Zeke and Pollard?
There are times they put both on the field at the same time.
I think that's an opportunity to make both guys even more dangerous and get the most out of both players while also making sure you're not over-leveraging Christian McCaffrey. You've got to learn how to win with the appropriate amount of CMC.
There are those that would look at, let's be frank, Chuba doesn't catch the ball regularly. Like, if the ball comes out and it hits the hands of C-Mac, that's a catch and we're moving. Chuba, I'm not completely comfortable depending on him to routinely catch the football as of yet. So if you're putting him on the field with C-Mac, you're essentially saying one's the runner, the other one has a receiving threat. That's the only pushback I can see from the request that you have, which is a reasonable request.
It is a reasonable request, and I also think, like, Chuba has struggled. I actually thought he acquitted himself pretty well in the Eagles game. I think it was six targets, five receptions, I think. So I think some of his early struggles in the pass game might have been he was feeling the pressure of limited playing time. And that's not something he's really felt, obviously, this time as Oklahoma State, as his role grew over time. He became more and more part of their offense. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I listen, Christian McCaffrey, I'm cool if he plays this weekend.
As am I.
I do want to see them continue to find the sweet spot of getting the most out of him, using him as a weapon to really attack opposing defenses, even if he doesn't get the ball. And also continuing to use your young players like Chuba Hubbard.
Lastly for me, real quick, there are those that, like, Christian McCaffrey is hearing the sentiment of injury prone. My hope is that Christian doesn't hear the noise and is trying to come back to prove something to people. And as a human, as an athlete, it doesn't matter what household you come from, you want to be respected for the performance, especially once you get paid. C-Mac, do what's best for your body. It's a long season, bro. You ain't got nothing to prove to nobody. We know what you are when you're healthy.
Matt Rhule says Christian McCaffrey is 50-50 on whether he will play on Sunday. Are you comfortable if they play him this week? I think Stan and I have both gotten to, because we're at the three-week point today, I think we're more comfortable with playing him. But that doesn't mean Chuba Hubbard should go on a milk carton anytime soon. We've also got to get to Panthers big man, Derek Brown, who's got a take on the Vikings offense on Sports Radio FNZ.
They had a very good scheme when they came to play us. Kirk Cousins is a damn good quarterback. So, you know, you got your talent set for you every single week. So, you know, we got to be able to game plan and, you know, execute the game plan. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it falls on us to get that done.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That is the voice of my guy, Derek Brown. I'm in the Derek Brown business. I love that dude.
I like DB.
He's the perfect combination of just a good dude, like a good family man, and also he's really coming into his own as an NFL defensive tackle in year two of his career. And he's starting to get a lot of attention for how well he's played overall.
Pro Football Focus grades him very high. I think who was on defense? Reddick was rated the highest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like Reddick, Shaq, and then Derek Brown or some order like that.
And so that is his take on the Vikings offense. And I think it's fair to look at this game and look at names like Kirk Cousins and Dalvin Cook. Alexander Mattison, who's been very good in the place of Dalvin Cook for this year.
Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson might be a third or fourth best wide receiver duo in the league.
So
maybe first or second.
For a team that we've looked at and said that people will look at that 2-3 record and say, oh, well, we, the royal we, should beat the Minnesota Vikings.
Look at their schedule.
Well, look at their schedule. Look at how things have gone for them. Mm-hmm. This will be a challenge for the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, considering that they're coming off a pretty awful loss in the Philadelphia Eagles.
So when I say look at the schedule, you know, that's why I'm a big proponent of what were the conditions of the teams you played when you played them. The Minnesota Vikings have lost three games. Week one, on the road, at Cincinnati, they lose by three. Clearly that Cincinnati team is not as bad as we thought it would be. Week two, on the road, at the undefeated Arizona Cardinals, they lose by one. And then week four versus a playoff team, your Cleveland Browns at home, they lose by a touchdown. So what's that average margin of defeat? 4 points? 5 points? This Vikings team, the same group essentially that beat this Carolina Panthers team in a fourth quarter comeback a year ago,
mm-hmm.
now comes into Bank of America Stadium, a place, quite frankly, where if they cut on that Eagles tape, they go, you can get something done against that Panthers defense if they play the way that they played on Sunday.
We'll throw this out to you guys in the text line. I just want to get it's a vibe check on the Panthers. Where is your vibe on this Panthers-Vikings game? Because I said that the Philadelphia game was a lot more about the Carolina Panthers than it was about the Philadelphia Eagles. Going into that game, I said if the Eagles win this game, it's going to be more damning on you for losing it than it is going to be giving a whole heck of a lot of credit on the Philadelphia Eagles. And let's be honest, what Matt Rhule has essentially said is that loss was more on you as a team than it was on the Philadelphia Eagles going and winning that game. This game, if the Panthers and Vikings both are able to play their absolute best games, I don't know who I would take. That and part of this is the Vikings defense is suddenly looking like a Vikings defense from a few years ago. Daniil Hunter, 6 sacks. Yeah, Everson Griffin.
Yeah, he's getting in.
4 sacks. Even so then they've got another.
Kendricks at linebacker is a former Pro Bowler All-Pro.
So they've got another 7 sacks via 5 players. They have some guys up front in Dalvin Tomlinson and Michael Pierce alongside the 2 edge guys. You're going to need your offensive line to play better. And oh, by the way, Kirk Cousins is some iteration of Sam Darnold. He's never been as extremely bad as Sam was in New York. But Kirk has games where Kirk can beat himself and beat his own team. This game scares me. This game scares me a lot because it's more evenly matched, and the Panthers cannot play the game that they've played but across the first 5 games of the season, which are they've never put 4 really good quarters together.
Allow me to simplify if I could, because you know I love doing that when we do our breakdowns.
You're the simplifier. That's an inside the show joke just for all those out there.
Kirk Cousins and his Minnesota Vikings are the second best team the Panthers have played. The best team they played, we know, was the game at Dallas. Now this game is at home. Different. Kirk Cousins is not at the level of a Dak Prescott. But Kirk Cousins also, and we make fun of him because he's made a ton of cash betting on himself.
He's also a cornball.
And the personality is different. But this dude is still good enough to come into your crib, the veteran that he is, and take one from you if you're not ready to play. I agree with you. Kirk Cousins right now, 12th in the league in passer rating, in front of Josh Allen, just behind Lamar Jackson. Especially when you got weapons like he has to work with. I agree with you. I didn't think last week was a, air quote, trap game. I think this one is. Because I wonder what is going to be the psyche of this Carolina Panthers football team coming off 2 losses, having just been embarrassed at home. The issues that you're having, guys coming back from injury, guys that are still hurt. Shaq Thompson won't go this week. So I look at that and go, man, this is a recipe for now. We talked about not letting 2 wins turn to 3. I consider this Sunday a trap game.
So just in terms of, for what is your definition of a trap game for this?
To me, it's a trap game when there's an opponent that you should beat and other circumstances distract you or prevent you from playing your best ball.
Okay. So then that case, the only thing that I might have a caveat with is I don't know you should beat the Minnesota Vikings.
You're saying all things equal. And I feel the way I feel with C-Mac or without C-Mac.
Yes. I think all things being equal.
Because Dalvin Cook is banged up for them, too.
I think these are relatively – I think there are points where you can look at Minnesota and say they have more talent. I think there are points where you can say the Panthers have more – I think they're fairly evenly matched. And I think the advantage is you're playing at home. But I do think – one reason why I'll go with you on the trap game idea on this is less about the talent on the field – and more about the slippery slope. This is something you and I have talked about this week a fair amount. This next stretch of games is a really dicey area for the Panthers to prolong any struggles that they've had. If they had turned around and beat the Eagles, even if it was a close game, but you would beat the Eagles.
Win by a field goal at the end.
So you're 4-1 now. Mm-hmm. If you had just managed to not lose that game, maybe I feel differently about this game. But you've seen a 3-0 start turn to 3-2. You lose this game. You get distracted by you've got to go back on the road next week. You get distracted on, it's the offensive line or Matt Rule's, mother bleeping the defense.
Robbie Anderson's passionate plea to correct some things.
The outburst. If you start focusing on things that aren't football and taking care of what you can control.
Yeah.
This loss could clearly turn into, and I made the comment yesterday, this could turn into what the Bears' loss was after they had won 3 straight last year. You lost the first 2, played reasonably well in those 2 games. You won the next 3 games, but you had not buttoned up all the little things that need to be buttoned up in the NFL. You went against the Bears, you lost to a team. That Bears game is the Eagles game. So this could be the game after. Mm-hmm. Where this is that was the Saints, so a little bit different. The Saints a little bit higher gear. You can't lose this game. If you want to call it, I'll agree with you, it's a trap game. I also think we're venturing into must-win territory because if you lose this game, it will be time to finally bring out the other P word. We will have gone from talking in 3 games from playoffs to talking panic. And at that point, then it opens up a lot of questions that nobody here wants to sit and talk about next Monday.
These two teams actually match up well with one another. Strength of the Panthers defense, putting pressure on the passer. Strength of the Vikings offense. They're tied for eighth in fewest sacks allowed in the league. This offensive line is as good or better than the Carolina Panthers offensive line. And given some recent analytics I've seen about the Panthers O-line, it's a lot better. The quarterback is better. The wide receivers, I would call it a draw. Some might lean slightly Minnesota. And upon further review, I would lean slightly Minnesota. And then defensively, with the injuries in the secondary, Gilmore can't play yet. Henderson didn't grade out great versus the Eagles. C.J. Henderson coming over from the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Justin Burris banged up at safety. It's going to be – this is where games like this – and I come back to you with this. Games like this is where I look to Matt Rhule and go, show me that you can give us an advantage versus a team that's comparable.
Can I just be honest? I don't want to lose to Kirk Cousins. There is normally very little shame in losing to who I think is a good quarterback and somebody that people have bleeped on unnecessarily. I just don't want to lose. He's enough of a cornball. He's enough of a cheeseball.
He doesn't have a punchable face, though.
No, he's not punchable. He's only punchable in the context of, I've already lost to Jalen Hurts this in October. I don't want to lose to another quarterback. That if we just talk about, should good teams beat Kirk Cousins? If we just focus on the quarterback, yes, good teams should be able to make Kirk Cousins look like the more human version of himself. That's what I need to see from the defense this weekend. Is this game coming up on Sunday? We're doing a vibe check. Is this game more about the Panthers or the Vikings? Meaning, is this more about the Panthers not losing it or the Vikings winning it as we look ahead to this weekend? But we've got to continue on. We got to take a look back real quick at ACC tip-off. Joe Oviush of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh helps us say goodbye to Coach K and Roy on Sports Radio FNC.